Baie welkom by hierdie geleentheid. Dit is my groot voorreg om namens Penguin, Suid-Afrika vir Margery Poland vandag hier te verwelkom saam met Daniel Higu op die verhoog. Hulle praat, soos u weet, oor Margery se jongste roman The Keeper, wat ons ook in Afrikaans beskikbaar het as Die Bewaker. Vir ons daarby Pen, u sal weet Margery is word tereg beskou. Margery word tereg beskou as 'n grand dame van die Suid-Afrikaanse Engelse letterkunde en dit was vir ons 'n voorreg by Penguin om Margery se stem in Afrikaans ook te laat opklink. Dit is iets wat ons voel gedoen moet word en Margery is 'n fantastiese poëtiese skrywer, prosa skrywer en wie anders as Afrikaanse topvertaler Daniel Higu om met 'n sensitiewe teks soos hierdie om te gaan. Ek dink u sal met my saamstem dat Die Bewaker een van die mooiste tekste is in Afrikaans ook. Margery se werk word nou is al in Frans beskik of vertaal van haar werk en dis vir my ook lekker om vir u mee te deel dat haar werk nou in Nederlands ook vertaal word binnekort van haar werk. Baie welkom. Sy sal graag vir u boeke teken daar in die boekverkooptent hier aan die ander kant as na afloop van hierdie gesprek. Geniet dit.
Dankie.
Baie dankie, Meld. Ja, Margaret, jy is inderdaad vertaal nie net in Frans nie, maar ook in Japanees en dan in Afrikaans. Maar hierdie is nie die eerste boek van jou wat in Afrikaans vertaal word nie. Daar is al reeds, as ek reg getel het, 4 van jou kinderboeke in Afrikaans vertaal.
Almal, ek is baie jammer, my Afrikaans is baie swak. Ek wil graag in Engels praat, verskoon my. My children's books, a few of them, Die Bidspringkaan in die Maan, and Die Vuurkoolsterre, en 'n paar ander boeke wat in Afrikaans verskyn het.
Ja, jy het eindelijk gedebuteer as 'n kinderboekskrywer in 1979 met The Mantis and the Moon, wat toen nou ook in Afrikaans vertaal is. En jou loopbaan as volwassen romanskrywer het eers omtrent 10 jaar later gebeur.
1993.
Ja.
Ja. I started off with tiny, tiny children, so it seemed appropriate to be writing children's books then. As they grew up, so my books got older.
Maar dit wil nie sê dat dit is makkeliker om 'n kinderboek te skryf.
No, it's not.
En jy gebruik dan ook Afrika gegewe, Afrika mitologie, Afrika verhale in jou kinderboeke, want dit is eintlik jou studieveld.
Ever since I was little, I was brought up outside Port Elizabeth. I always felt that it was absolutely essential to be able to speak an African language, and it was part of a family tradition as well. So when I went to university, I did Xhosa as my first degree, and then I went on to do a doctorate in Zulu when I went to live in KwaZulu-Natal.
Ja, dit is dus Dr. Margaret Poland wat hier sit. Jy het ook 'n jaar lang op Stellenbosch studeer.
I was here at Stellenbosch for 1 year, and that's why I feel so skaam dat my Afrikaans so swak is. maar ek het Xhosa geleer en dis waarom my Afrikaans so swak is. Ek was baie besig met my ander taal. And I had the most wonderful year in Stellenbosch, and to be back here now is just a very magical thing. We've had a fantastic time going and looking at all the student pubs.
Jy het wel 'n probleem gehad hier op Stellenbosch. Jy kon niemand vind wat Xhosa kon praat destyds nie.
When I was here, it was a long time ago, in 1971, there were just so few black people in Stellenbosch, and one day I was desperate. I had to do an oral exam, and I rushed out into the street, and I saw a person, and I ran up to him, and I said, "Molo, molo," and he said, "Wat se, miss?" And I don't think I did very well in my oral.
Well, this is it anders in Stellenbosch. Margaret, waaroor het jou doktorsgraad gehandel?
I did my doctorate on Nguni cattle. I think one of my first memories ever was of cattle, going past in the road, and I was a very small girl, but then after that I didn't really notice them, and then one day somebody came to visit me with a whole lot of pictures of Nguni cattle and explained to me the wonderful connection between the plants, animals, birds, and the color patterns. So that, for example, if you see an animal whose name is Amakandakatlilo, which is the eggs of the lark, it will be a creamy animal with soft red spots on it, and it looks exactly like the eggs of a lark. So this connection between a very acute observation in nature and the color pattern is something that is just so specific to this naming practice, and it was a wonderful study.
Ja, want dit was 'n graad wat jy gekry het in Zulu letterkunde, maar dit gaan oor beeste.
No, in fact, I remember getting a phone call from somebody to ask me if I knew about artificial insemination for Nguni cattle, and I said I wasn't a vet, unfortunately, but I could tell him about the poetry and the praise poetry of cattle. But it was about the way in which these wonderful names are constructed and the whole thing of metaphor, and metaphor in Zulu, and the imagery and the folklore of it, the poetry. So, and I remember my supervisor saying this is going to be a very small study, and there was enough for something much, much bigger than I wrote myself.
Ja, en dit het ook 'n prachtige boek geword.
I was very fortunate because my first cousin Lee Voigt, who's a very well-known artist, did the pictures for me, and it was a collaboration which was a family thing as well as a work of great friendship.
En die boek is nog beskikbaar.
Ja, dit is. Ja.
Ek dink ek het een eksemplaar gesien by Protea boekwinkel, maar ek mag nie reklame maak nie. Nie op hierdie grond nie. Margaret, kom ons praat nou oor die boek wat ek vertaal het, The Keeper in Engels, die bewaker in Afrikaans, en daar was al reeds die eerste, ek wil nie sê probleem nie, maar uitdaging, die titel. Ja. Want die Engelse woord keeper het meer as een betekenis. Wil jy daarop uitbrei?
When Daniel was going to translate the book, and I just have to say that it is the most wonderful translation, and in fact the book should have been written in Afrikaans. And I really do mean that, because he has done the most superb, not reinvention, but just has lifted it into another realm, and I think it's most beautifully translated. But to go to the title, a keeper, a lighthouse keeper, you can call a keeper, the keeper. But in the story it has a double meaning, because the main woman protagonist, Rika Dupria, is the keeper of the story of the lighthouse keeper. And it was very important that we had those two roles, because had we called it Die Viertouren
Wachter,
then she would not have had her part in it, and that was absolutely essential to the core of the story.
Ja, met andere woorde, ons het dus, of Marguerite het gekies vir die symboliese vertaling, die symboliese betekenis, die bewaker, in plek van die vuurtoringwachter. Die vuurtoringwachter is ook een baie lang woord, natuurlijk so moeilik op die voorblad inpas, maar hoe groter die titel, hoe kleiner met die skrywer se naam staan. So, dis goeie raad vir skrywers, hou die titel kort. Nou, dit is eintlik 'n historiese roman. Dit speel af in twee tydperke, twee jare, spesifiek 1921 en 1957, op 'n eiland naby Port Elizabeth met 'n vuurtoring. Is dit 'n waar verhaal?
It is a real place, and I had a problem with it, because all the research that I did was on Bird Island, which is literally a scab in the sea of Port Elizabeth. It's a wonderful gannet colony and penguin colony as well, but it's had this very lonely lighthouse on it. In a way, it has become a mythic place for me in the story, because I couldn't go there myself. In fact, I applied to go there, but I'm a terrible ninny. I knew that I would be too frightened as well. And I wasn't allowed there because only scientists are allowed to go onto that island. They certainly didn't want novelists wandering around. But when I was writing the book, the lighthouse keeper tells his story to Rika, who is the verpleegster in the hospital where, because he's fallen. And she makes this mythic place in her head to give him a context. And I think that's something that we often do in reading a book, in writing. You make your context, which is entirely your own. And so this island, although it is based on Bird Island in many ways and much of the history of it, and I did a great deal of research on it, is also parts of other places that I've seen, other lighthouses that I've been in, because it had to be something that I had experienced in a sense myself. So it's a composite.
Ja, en jy het 'n baie goeie kennis van vuurtorings en die werking van vuurtorings.
Well, I felt that if you're going to write about something, you've got to do your research really carefully. I'm waiting for someone to tell me I made a mistake. But it was a most fascinating study. There aren't a lot of books written about South African lighthouses, but there are one or two really magnificent ones. And I think what for me was one of the most wonderful moments, serendipitous moments, if you like, is that I went into the library at Rhodes in Grahamstown and I said to the librarian, "Have you got anything on Bird Island?" And she said, "I've got a file somewhere and it's not catalogued." And she found it. And in this file, the district surgeon who had dealt with people on the island for many, many years had written anecdotes, collected cuttings, written notes about the people on the island. And without that resource, I could never have ever invented the story because of the kind of problems that this doctor dealt with, yeah. Which is what the story really goes, yeah. You know, what it's about.
Ja, die eiland is natuurlijk nou onbewoond, het is een natuurgebied, maar destijds is dit bewoond door twee groepen mensen.
What I found so fascinating, this little island is no bigger than two rugby fields, that's how small it is, and it's hardly got any features on it at all. I mean, there may be some of you who have been there or who know it, but what I found that in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s and the 50s when it was inhabited, there were the lighthouse keepers who worked for one department, there were the guano workers who worked for the fisheries, and they did not mix with each other, and yet they were so dependent in a crisis on help and on each other, but there was not any mixing between them. And the thing that shocked me most of all was that the lighthouse keepers were changed, especially in later days, every two or three years, because the isolation was so enormous that it obviously had a psychological effect, especially on wives and children. There was a guano worker who had been on that island for 38 years without anybody ever wondering about what was happening in his head and whether he needed to be transferred. And to me, just it was somehow South Africa in microcosm. It was looking at two communities and how does one deal with that extraordinary isolation and also dependence, codependence, which has to be there when there's a problem.
Daar's 'n karakter in die boek, een van die guano werkers, Misklip. Is hy die man wat 38 jaar op die eiland was?
Hy was 38 jaar by die eiland.
Vandaar sy naam Misklip. Want hy moes
I don't know where that name came from. It just came into my head. But
wat, jy het dit opgemaak?
Ja, ek het dit opgemaak. Sy naam is eintlik Dudley Kuster. The thing about that was, and I think it's something that is so much part of our history as well, is that we give people names, Soma, without giving them their weight, without giving them their reality. And especially in the old days, one would give people the most extraordinary names, which were denigrating as well. And Misklip never told anybody what his name was until finally there was somebody who recognized him. And then he was Dudley Kuster, but also Misklip, because yeah. That is what he had become.
Yeah. Nou moet ons daarom seker iets oor die karakter sê. Dit gaan oor twee geslagte, 'n vader en 'n seun wat albei vuurtoringwagters op die eiland was. En dan veral oor hulle vroue en die eensaamheid wat hulle daar moes verduur.
Well, when I was reading the notes which I found in this file, rather I suppose now we would call it depression, but the doctor wrote about women suffering always from melancholy, and one could understand how that would happen. When I read a lot of the research, these gannets just shrieked endlessly. One had this endless shrieking of these birds that you couldn't get away from. You couldn't really cultivate anything. There was nobody to talk to. Men were obsessed with the light, with the duties that they had to perform there. And what I came across in the research was that, in fact, it was one of the lighthouse keepers himself made a little model of the lighthouse out of shells. And for me, it became symbolic of trying to counter in making something very beautiful and fragile by one of the wives, the implacable weight and fear and obsession, if you like, of the big lighthouse, which is there to save lives, but has also become something malevolent to the women who have to deal with the men who look after it.
So mens kon sê dat die groot vuurtoring van klip verteenwoordig die mannelike in die verhaal en hierdie klein miniatuur skulp vuurtoring die vroulike.
In a way it was, and I think because I'm writing about 1921 and 1957 as well, people's roles were very circumscribed in that time. Also the internal silence that happens in a situation like that. Just on a side note, what also fascinated me was that the only way in the 1920s to send a message off the island was with a carrier pigeon. Now, you're desperate to make contact with somebody, you're desperate to speak to somebody. So you write a message and you send it out into the world and you don't know if it will ever get there because they were blown off course, they were taken by birds of prey, they never made it to the land at all, and your words go off there, you're just talking to God somewhere because there's no one you can contact, not easily.
Ja, die hoofkarakter in die verhaal is dan die seun, Hannes Haker, wat moet skool toe gaan. Hy word groot op die eiland, maar dan moet hy skool toe gaan na Port Elizabeth, en dit veroorsaak eintlik 'n groot trauma in sy lewe, want daar gebeur ook iets op die eiland terwyl hy weg is by die skool. Ek mag as dit verklap.
Yeah. What I found, where that came from, was that, in fact, I have to tell you how I came to write this story. When I was 14 at school in Port Elizabeth, we were asked to do an oral in our English class, and you could talk about anything you wanted to. And one of the girls in the class was the daughter of the lighthouse keeper on Bird Island, and she stood up and she spoke for about 5 minutes about what it was like to live there, and the fact that when you went to school, when the holidays came, if the tug couldn't get back because of the weather, you had to go back to shore and you never got home for the holidays. So there was always this anxiety of not getting home, of not seeing your parents, and the anxiety of mothers. Can you imagine being cut off from children without any way of communicating except with a carrier pigeon? What sort of trauma would that cause, and a sense of separation? So the harshness of the life was, and the isolation of that was what got to me.
Yeah. Now, Thomas, yeah, Thomas, Hannes Haker is a man wat nie praat nie. Hy kommunikeer baie moeilik, ook met sy vrou, en op die ouend vertel hy sy verhaal dan aan die verpleegster, want hy beland in die hospitaal nadat hy geval het, daar op die eiland in die vuurtoring geval het. So die verpleegster Rika Dupré word dan die bewaker van sy verhaal. Sy is dan eindelijk die skrywer, jou alter ego.
I wanted to explore something, and it's to do with being a writer. You become immersed in your characters, you become immersed in a world and a place. And you have to speak to those people. They become more alive to you than the people around you. I could not find Hannes Harker anywhere because I didn't know a lighthouse keeper. Everything that I've ever written has been something that is fairly closely connected with my own experience, and I've always believed that was really important. You must write out of what you know and what you understand. But every now and again, one can have a meeting with somebody or a moment where, which I call a beacon moment, where something happens which doesn't have to have a past or a future or anything like that, but you make a connection of complete understanding with somebody's thoughts and where they are in the world. And that becomes not part of your life or the plot of your life, but it becomes something of the inspiration that makes it possible to carry on with your story. And in this story, each of my characters, in a sense, has been just one of those beacon moments that, in a way, made me know that it was all right, that I could carry on. And can I tell you one synchronous thing that happened? I was about to go and launch this book. It was the first launch that I was going to do. And my email went, and I thought, I'm not going to look at it. And then I thought, no, I must just quickly have a look, because one does that. And it was a letter from a young man that I've taught with. And he said he had been writing a poem to his grandfather. And as he finished writing it on the computer, up came the invitation to my launch with this picture of the lighthouse on the front. His grandfather was the lighthouse keeper on Bird Island. His mother had been at school with me. And I went to my launch knowing, in a sense, in that small moment, that if I had witnessed something, in a sense, as a conduit, I write the book, of course I do, I make it up. But there is another level at which things happen that make you consoled, if you like, that what you're doing has a purpose to it.
En was sy ma dan die meisie wat die mondeling gedoen het oor die eiland?
Ja.
Ja, dit is ongelooflik. Maar in 'n sekere sin is jy ook 'n bewaker, want jy teken hier 'n stuk geskiedenis op wat eindelijk heeltemal verdwyn het. Daar is nog baie min, sover ek weet, bemande vuurtorings aan die kus van Suid-Afrika. Die meeste is nou geautomatiseer, nie waar nie?
Most of them are automated now, and that was the thing. I mean, what I found in reading the research and going into the lives of the different lighthouse keepers was their real love for their light, as a captain has for his ship or a train driver for his train. I have this thing about beautiful machinery, and I think there is that deep connection. They have a sort of a soul to them. And when the light becomes automated, it just becomes, it no longer has a heart. And I think that whole connection, if you like, between men and those machines, that whole way of life is something that has now fallen away and apparently is much mourned by those who love their lighthouses.
Margaret, jy is bekend vir jou poëtiese styl en vir die wonderlike manier waarop jy 'n landskap kan beskryf. En jy het my vertel, dit is soos wat jy meestal jou boeke ook begin, met 'n beskrywing van die milieu. En ek wil hê ons moet 'n passasie voorlees, eers jy in Engels, ek dan in Afrikaans, en toevallig het ek vanoggend uitgevind, die passasie wat ek gekies het, is die een waarmee jy begin het, maar jou redakteur het gesê, nee, dit mag nie aan die begin van die boek staan nie, dit moet verder aankom, want jy kan nie, jy verveel die leser as jy met 'n landskapsbeskrywing begin.
I would have bored everybody, because whenever I write a book, it's absolutely essential to set it in its landscape. And I can write pages and pages and pages and pages and pages of landscape, and then, of course, kill your darlings, and the editor says, aunt, you've got to start with... In fact, my husband usually says, you've got to start with a conversation, so that you set that immediate tone of perhaps excitement. But Daniel this morning chose a passage to read, and it is the passage that I wrote... first when I started writing this book. And I also have to say to you, this is quite a small book, but I wrote 17 chapters of it, and then I literally pressed the delete button and started again. It's, in a funny way, been the most difficult book that I've written, because I knew that I was on the wrong track, and I was absolutely distraught. And I didn't quite press the delete button. I put the pages under the bed. But I had to start again, chapter one, Once Upon a Time. The island lies 5 miles offshore, southwest from the densely wooded cape, but 31 miles from port. Between it and the mainland is a channel, taupe green, cobalt blue. Sometimes that blue is all of the sky and sea, indivisible. And sometimes the heat bounces off the island rocks, an aura of fire, and the waves glitter as if scattered with mica chips. Sometimes the air is a tumult of gannets, a rising tide of wingbeats, and sometimes it is so still that the piping of a land bird blown off course can be heard above the breathing of the sea. But when the southeaster blows, the wind whips the water to a salt grey bile. Even its fish must flee the turbulence, even the sharks. It is on those days that boats never venture near. Nothing comes except the wind, a great baleful beast.
Die eiland lê 5 mijl van die kus af, suidwes van die digbeboste Kaap, maar 31 mijl van die hawe af. Tussen die eiland en die vasteland is 'n vaarkanaal, grysgroen, kobaltblou. Soms kan 'n mens nie onderskei tussen die blou van die lug en van die see nie. En soms weerkaats die hitte van die eilandrotse af, 'n aura van vuur, en die branders glinster asof hulle met mica vlokkies bestrooi is. Soms is die lug 'n geroesemoes van malgasse, 'n vloedgety van vlerkslaa, en soms is het so stil dat die gefluit van 'n landvoël wat van koers af geraak het, bo die asemhaling van die see gehoor kan word. Maar as die suidooster waai, word die water tot 'n soutgrys gal opgeklits. Selfs die visse vlug dan vir die onstuimigheid, die haie ook. Sulke dae waag die bote dit nooit naby nie. Niks kom aan buiten die wind nie. 'N groot, onheilspellende gedierte.
Thank you. Can I say something here about Daniel's translation again? One of the difficulties with the book was that obviously some of the characters would normally speak Afrikaans, and writing in English, it can become stilted and can become very, very difficult to... If you come from Port Elizabeth, you can mingle the two together, but in a way, it was very difficult to make it fluent. And when it was translated into Afrikaans, it just has this fluency, especially the conversation, which I don't think that I achieved, which you certainly did. So thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Mara. Ek moet daarom sê dat Marguerite het wonderlike Afrikaanse dialoog geskryf, veral Misklip praat heerlike Afrikaans. Maar my vraag is nou, skep dit nie 'n struikelblok vir Engelse lesers, die Afrikaanse dialoog in die Engelse roman nie?
It is a problem, but I have to say that my books stay in South Africa. I've had difficulty in another sense with the Afrikaans here. To just translate it straight into English would take away the character of somebody like Misklip. He wouldn't be himself anymore. I've had this with other books that I've written. For example, I wrote a book called Shades, which is set on a mission station in the Eastern Cape. A great number of those characters are Xhosa speaking, and to translate that and not to keep the flavor of the Xhosa and also to incorporate it into their conversation would have taken away something of their character. And I know that people, for example, you know, like agents or whatever, say this is difficult. It's so, in a way, specific to South Africa. It doesn't appeal beyond where you are, which I'm really sad about. But I feel it's really important to remain authentic to the way in which people speak.
Dink jy dat 'n skrywer in so 'n geval agter in 'n woordelys mag opneem?
Well, I suppose one could, but it's like reading a Russian novel where you've got to keep checking everybody's name. and becomes quite tedious.
Yeah.
So I think it is a problem, and I'm sure it's a problem also for people writing in Afrikaans when it becomes translated into English for overseas audiences as well.
Yeah.
But that tone, that feel, somehow to lose that would be to lose something from the story, and I'd rather not.
Margaret, sal ons vra u die gehoor vra?
What happens if nobody wants to ask a question?
Daar sit Margaret se hand, ja. Hier kom 'n mikrofoon aan.
Margaret, is this a story, a fictional story, or does it now resort under, you know, talk literature or whatever you call it?
Sorry, I didn't.
Is this now a story, a fictional story?
Is it a fictional story?
What you set it out
as? Yes, it is a fictional story completely. It's a relationship between, it's a conversation between the lighthouse keeper and the nurse who nurses him, because there are a few rules that happen in a lighthouse. You must never fall, you must never leave the light. I mean, that is sort of part of the mythology of the lighthouse, if you like. But behind it, because I've always felt it important to do one's research carefully, there are elements within the story which are, in fact, based in what actually happened on that island.
Yes.
But I've used elements of that to make what is in fact a fictional story. In fact, of all the books that I've written, it's probably the most fictional.
Okay. So when somebody attempts something like what you have done now, somebody starting out, would they put it out as fiction then, you think? Or would it be a sort of factual.
No, I think this is really fiction, this one. My book Shades that I wrote, which is based on a mission station in the Eastern Cape, is a great deal more faction than fiction.
Okay.
But I think that's, with any historical novel particularly, you know, a novel is a novel. You need to be able to give people conversation. You need to be able to get into their feelings. Otherwise, one must write history.
That's right.
And I am a novelist, and so I have used those elements. But I hope very much that I have researched carefully enough not to offend the historians too much.
Thanks a lot.
Dankie. Nog vraag? Daar is 'n vraag, ja.
I would like to know something about the translation process. Was there cooperation between you, or did Daniel work on his own and just surprise you at the end?
Daniel astonished me. Daniel, you answer that one.
Ek kan nie onthou nie. Ek het 'n paar vrae gevra.
Ja.
Byvoorbeeld, waar is die eiland?
Ja.
Wat het ek nog gevra?
Daar was baie dinge wat jy gevra het. a lot of them were to do with the conversation, where I used the wrong kind of words, and you very courteously pointed out my mistakes to me, and you were wonderfully courteous. Also colloquial things in Afrikaans, which you translated so beautifully. But I wanted to ask you that question as well, because you didn't translate word for word, you translated feeling for feeling and atmosphere for atmosphere.
Yeah.
Now, with a poem, that must be very much more difficult because you have to keep the rhythms and things like that. But how was it with this book? Did you curse me?
Nee, ek het kort daar omgedraai. Kort voor vloek omgedraai. Nee, die groot uitdaging was dat Marguerite gebruik graag die die ing werkwoordsvorm, is dit die participle, die lopende, singende, etende, wat die mens in Afrikaans nie kan doen nie, en dan reig sy hulle in een sin. En in Afrikaans beteken dit dat die ritme van die sin gaan verander, omdat jy dit nie so kan doen nie, en dat jy dikwels een lang sin moet verdeel in korter sin. So, ritmies lees die boek anders, dit is heeltemal waar. Maar ek het my best probeer om die poëtiese beskrywings poëties te hou. En gelukkig het ons in Afrikaans een baie, baie goeie woordeboek, Afrikaans, Engels, Engels-Afrikaans, die Faros woordeboek is sekerlik die beste woordeboek wat ons in Suid-Afrika het. En die het my geweldig gehelp.
Well, I don't think that in at any point at all was I ever unhappy or not, as I said, astonished by the beautiful way in which it was done. And it's the first time that I have worked with a translator so closely, and it's been just a huge privilege to work also with a poet of such stature as Daniel is. And in reading his book, Takelwerk, which I have recently read, in the bigger questions, the broader issues, the wonderful intimacy of that poetry, the sense of recognition that I have had, Daniel, in looking at your work, the small things that are important to you. Jo Boom, I also had a tree that was my ship and my place when I was small. And just in your poetry, to be able to share and to recognize those things which have given me such enormous pleasure and meaning myself in my own writing has made me feel a wonderful connection with you as a translator as well, because you love the same things.
Die ou
peperboom en die uil en die toktokkie en die mol en die bomshelter en alles wat so vir my baie dierbaar is.
Ja, maar baie dankie, daar had ek nou onverdiende reklame gekry. Marguerite, daar die vuurtoringkie wat daar neergeset is, beteken het, ons het nog 10 minute. So, daar is nog vrae tyd. Hiervoor is ene.
For those that haven't read it, as I said, the lighthouse keeper falls, and is quite severely injured and so has to be taken to hospital. And we're talking about 1957, so people stayed for quite a long time. And the nurse in the story was somebody who recognized, again, it's a sense of recognition, recognized in this person something profoundly moving that moved her. Perhaps beyond what was professional, and yet I'm sure that this does happen. In no way did I want to make this into a sensational kind of love affair, because that would have been completely out of the spirit of the book. What I wanted to talk about was, as I said earlier, that sense that when one is caring for somebody, when one is deeply involved with somebody's well-being, or somebody's heart, there can be that spark of deep connection that does not in any way have to be perpetuated. It is simply there. And the older that I have got and the more that I have written and found characters or been involved with writing books is the sense that one is listening, that one is the keeper of so many stories that come to you and that are given in trust. And that is a really wonderful thing if it happens, and something to be honored and respected. And I think quite often for a nurse or for somebody in that position, that can and does happen. And when it does, it gives one a sense of meaning and vocation beyond the ordinary everyday task that one has to do.
In the process of your research, did you land on Lawrence Green's chapters on the lighthouse, written quite a long while ago? And I remember he called the one Cooper of the Lights. And when I heard you said the keeper, I thought about this Cooper person. And I remember he stressed that it had to be a very specific person, character, to be a keeper of the lights.
You do have to be a very specific character to be a keeper of the lighthouse. In the research that I did, it seems that lighthouse keepers' sons become lighthouse keepers and they marry lighthouse keepers' daughters. In a way, one has to be able to cope with that life and have done so from the time that one was small. And I remember reading a thing that if you, lighthouse keepers' children, or people who had been at sea, naval people or people who had been at sea for many years who could cope with that being taken away from family connection, or people from very isolated farms. And in my story, I speak a lot about, well, she's not lighthouse, which means she can't cope with that. You have to be able to take on the whole life, especially as a wife. Otherwise, the isolation becomes too great.
Ja, dit was byna onvertaalbaar. She's not lighthouse.
Sy is nie voortdurend nie.
Ek, miskien het ons nog vraag, tyd vir een vraag.
Ja.
Hier is 'n vraag hier.
Ja. The nurse never resented not being asked her story. Am I right?
The nurse never resented not being asked her story. No, she didn't. Which is an odd thing to do, because then, in a funny way, it would have made the relationship quite different. And I think, again, as a writer, and this is talking about the process of writing as well, I become deeply, deeply involved with the lives of the characters that I write about, but they never ask me about me. And they don't know anything about me. And in a funny way, Rika in the story is symbolic of, I've done this before with another book of mine called Recessional for Grace, where one is standing with the story given to you, and it is the way that you interpret it, but you yourself are exposed in it in different ways that perhaps one doesn't even realize, but you are not participant in the story.
Ek dink, ons moet nou afsluit, baie dankie Margaret, dit was regtig 'n insiggewende gesprek selfs vir my, en ek is seker daarvan ook vir die gehoor.
Baie, baie dankie Daniel, and it was a great honor to work with you, thank you.
Dankie.